You're listening to Around Comics, episode 250, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week a revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, you should...
Of Chicago.
It is not.
Getting here is like, I forgot how fucking much I hate driving here.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. The prodigal son returns. It's, the drive is terrible.
It is.
Hey there, folks. I'm Christopher Niespen. Let's get you introduced to this week's panel on our 250th episode.
Wow. Yeah. Well played.
Yeah, you like that? That's because no one made a stop.
Yep. Nothing better to do for 250 consecutive episodes.
None of us have done all 250.
No. But you've got book club episodes and special episodes. So
Comics 101 episodes.
I'm saying this is our 250th episode together.
Good enough.
We had the fill-in episodes. We all listened to them beforehand and gave them our okay, right?
Yes, of course.
So our editorial touch is involved.
Quality
control here is very high.
Mr. Tom Caters.
Hello.
We're professionals.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
It's good. Good to see you again.
Good to see you as well.
From last week.
By the time you hear this, I'm married.
Well, congratulations, Tom.
Thank you. I'm sure the wedding went fine.
Bachelor Tom is dead by this point.
It didn't rain during the ceremony. I'm sure everything went really well.
I'm sure it's perfect.
It's funny how you became bald in between.
Yeah, I got old. I got old fast. I got Chris's legs now.
Well, it was clutch. You got that ring on the finger then before that. Before it all fell.
I immediately searched.
It's a lovely pair of shackles you have on.
The weights.
Our special guest this week, returning guest to the show, you may know him as the mastermind behind Mail Order Ninja. He's been on the show several times and is one of the great minds in modern comics. He's Mr. Josh Elder.
It's heavy praise. I'll accept it.
You're visionary. You're a visionary man.
Heavy praise. Good to be here as always.
Yeah, it's good to see you back, man. Thanks for dropping by for this special occasion that we're not really making that big of a deal about. But the big deal is that the prodigal son has returned.
Prodigal son.
What's up, stranger?
How are you all?
Good. Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be back.
Sporting your retro Green Lantern shirt.
Yeah, I just got a new Green Lantern shirt, so I figured I'd wear it today.
Mm-hmm. It looks distressed.
Yes, it is distressed and worn and... I've had it for like 35 years.
Yeah.
I got it in the 60s at Woodstock.
John Broome signed this shirt back in the late 60s.
And where'd you get that shirt from?
I got it at 80stees.com.
Oh. So why don't you go order a shirt from 80stees.com. Tell them that you heard about it on Around Comics, because I've been trying to get those people to sponsor our show for years.
It's a very nice shirt, I have to say. I really like the quality of it. It's very soft. Go ahead.
Oh, that's nice material.
It does look like it's a sweet shirt as an objective observer.
Now, we're going to come
back. And I didn't know that you were courting them as an advertiser. I was looking around for fat guy comic book shirts.
Fat guy shirts.
Surprisingly, you would think would be easier to find, like 3X.
I blame the hipsters. They've bogarted all of our outfits.
Yeah, you can't
find
anything.
And so now it's all trending towards, you know.
Little, small.
Yeah.
Do you have a child small for me?
Yeah, exactly.
I need a 3XL, motherfucker. I
need a man size shirt, not a fucking boy shirt.
I'm a 40-year-old man, and I wear a 3XL.
In Green Lantern.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Give me my goddamn shirt.
I want to come back to the other shirt that you ordered, but first, we need to take care of some other business here. Our real sponsor, as always, InStockTrades.com. And waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, omnibus editions, absolute editions, essential showcases.
I miss this so much.
All of that stuff. I know. It's great. And all at discounted prices. And remember that all orders over 50 $50, do in fact ship for free.
All sort of formats to make it hard for you to enjoy your most beloved books.
Yeah, well, Tom and I discovered, we figured out what we're going to come out with is novels, hardcover novels in
harder cover.
Harder cover, not, but they're going to be tiny. Really, really tiny, and you need a magnifying glass to read them.
To capture the same.
It's a special edition.
It should be made of, like, metal.
Yeah, just make it really,
really,
hard.
Really heavy.
Yeah. But they're only going to be, like,
This is all based on my, I was looking at all my books the other week, and I was looking at my Omnibuy. I have a couple of Omnibuy, and I'm like, God, this makes it so much fucking harder to, if I wanted to read a Fantastic Four story, I would immediately not, I'd be like, oh, I gotta like sit down on the couch, and I gotta get this fucking Omnibuy out.
I'm reading
like
a Marvel team up instead.
Yeah, I'm like, I'd just rather have the fucking essential.
They need to come out with like an old school edition of like, you know, floppies with, on newsprint and like four color awesome. Printing.
You know, I like the Chronicles, the DC Chronicles, because they're like a trade. Right. They're in color. If you're like hung up, some people are hung up on the color thing, and they're now coming out with Flash and Green Lantern Silver Age stories in the Chronicle ones.
Nice.
And
you know,
reasonably priced, and you can fucking read it.
The Golden Age stuff is cool. I mean, because I really like the Chronicles too, but like reading Golden Age Superman is
It's
tough
laborious.
To get through. It's
Gemstone, before they started doing the archives for Tales from the Crypt and all the EC stuff, they actually released the EC stuff as single comics and more in modern comic sizes.
I want to read it on the train. I want to be able to read it on the train.
You ain't reading that Amazing Spider-Man omnibus on the train.
Yeah, imagine someone pulling that out on the train, like, and just laying it out on their lap.
Yeah. Do you mind holding this for me?
Or standing and holding it, just like...
Well, remember
they should have like a stand for like you have for music when you're playing the cello that you can just set up and open up the
it's like a little laptop cart that I use, and I lay out the omnibus or absolute on top of it and sit on my couch and read them because I can't hold it. My wrist
no
get out. They just it's too much.
Yeah, you ever get that? You ever get comic wrist whenever you're on?
You're reading it wrong. I don't know how you're reading
not supposed
it.
To masturbate with.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I'll lay on the couch and I'll like hold a comic up and like after what my wrist will start hurting. I get comic wrist.
So wait, okay, you're lying down and you're like this.
Read a comic.
The comic is above
you.
Why don't
you
saying.
Just sit up?
Yeah, why don't you sit up?
That's what I have to do to make my wrist stop hurting.
Instead of laying down. Laying down is for taking a nap, not reading.
Well, that's what usually happens after about 10
football.
Pages of a comic.
I think consuming any media whilst on your back is a mistake.
You're gonna fall asleep.
It's a flawed scenario from the start.
That's why I can never get through Sandman. I always
drop it on your head.
Drop it on my back, I fall asleep and
hold the absolute up over your head.
It's like a workout.
Which would be a great way to actually start like a Sandman based dream. Like that'd be a great comic in a comic if they were to do that.
Oh, that
someone's
awesome.
Reading like one
I
of the
bench
absolutes.
Press the absolutes as I'm laying down reading them. It's kind of tough.
I always hate it when I'm reading like a really good comic but I'm lying down and I start falling asleep even though it's like good. But it's like sometimes when you lie down and you're watching something interesting or reading something interesting, you cannot help but fall asleep. And the entire time while you feel it happening, you're like, it's like, I need to finish this. I want to read this.
Flash Rebirth, I was like that. And I was just like, just finish it.
No, I'll finish it tomorrow.
I usually sit in a bathtub of warm water and read comics. And amazingly, I fall asleep a lot.
Nude reading.
You have a lot of wet comic books.
All
right, so instocktrades.com. Remember, JLA Avengers. It's available at 47% off the cover price.
Well,
it'll be yours for just $10.59. We're going to be recording that very quickly.
I think you guys already did.
No, we did JLA.
Oh, JLA.
This is JLA.
Oh, I haven't read that. I have actually never read that.
Now's your chance.
I think
I might have to.
Yeah. It's dense.
I'll have to buy it.
It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Is there a hardcover? Is there an absolute edition?
There was.
The deluxe.
Can't get it anymore.
It's out of print.
Damn it.
You can search around on the internet and you can usually pick it up for about 60, 70 bucks.
I don't buy comics.
You don't buy comics anymore.
No.
I know.
I only barter for comics at this
point. Yeah, Sal,
chickens.
Sal has, he has a sweet black market comic deal going on. Music for
this episode, Flesh.
He's the black lantern comic book reader. I have not picked out music for our 250th episode. First of all, I think I'm going to bring the Hellraisers back for our intro for this one.
Oh, the classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to do the classic intro. But music, any suggestions?
When did we stop using the Hellraisers as the intro?
When Chris started editing episodes.
About a year and a half ago or so.
Wow.
Pixies and a bunch of other fucking bands.
You can see I listen closely to all the episodes after they've been posted.
I don't know.
Silence. Just like
Tom, music. Tom, you're usually good.
Well, for what we should pick for the 250th.
Just pick a band that you like.
Let's go with the Temptations.
Nice.
All right. Temptations it is. Except the one Temptations album I have at home may be a Temptations Christmas. So it's going to make
all Temptations Christmas songs.
It's all Temptations Christmas songs. All right. Done.
Childhood part of my life, it wasn't very pretty. See, I was born and raised in the slums of the city. It was a one-room shack that slept in other children beside me. We hardly had enough food or room to sleep. It was hard time. Needed something to eat my tummy.
All right, so that's our beginning business there.
Business.
Mr. Elder.
Business.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
This is our continuing series of episodes with guests of the Windy City Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Seeley last week.
Is that what we're doing?
It's kind of breaking that way. I keep trying to get Christian Alame to come out, but he's apparently...
I can't fucking understand what he says anyway.
Well, he's French.
Yeah.
First of
all, it sounds really pretty when he talks.
I don't understand what
But apparently he's having trouble keeping up with Doug Mankey on Green Lantern.
Oh,
so
he
keeps telling me that he wants to come by, but he keeps running behind.
He's making that up.
Yeah, yeah. He just doesn't want to spend any time.
I don't like you.
I don't
want to talk to you.
You smell funny.
Stop following me.
You mispronounce my name every time you say it. I wish you would stop saying it.
Christian's good people. We'll get him out here. But Mr. Elder, since we have last had you on the show, what have you been up to?
Well, the two things that are significant. One is I'm about to finish this proposal for Zuda called Ultimate Glutton, and it's about competitive eating. And it is basically the Rocky of competitive eating. Or if you're a manga fan, it's the Prince of Tennis of competitive eating.
Very similar, Rocky.
So
I don't know what.
So there's Kobayashi, and then
Joey Chestnut.
Joey Chestnut,
the current
the American.
This is
it's about time we took that fucking crown back.
The wiry American.
This is more like we follow this brash,
cocky
newcomer,
young upstart.
Named Alex, and he was only good at one thing, and that was eating. And it's true. And he's in back rooms, the backs of Soul
Black
Food
Market.
Yeah.
The
underground competitive eating circuit.
Underground competitive eating. That sounds
funny.
And he's become a bit of a legend in that circuit. And one of his performances is seen by a guy named Amadeus von Fleisch, who is a former competitive eater from the 70s. They called him the Bavarian Behemoth until he blew out his colon and now has this colostomy bag that he calls, he's painted a face on, and he calls it Brunhilde as Valkyrie and like talks to it all the time. And he becomes sort of his trainer, his Mickey. And, then together they formulate this plan to get into the regionals and then to later go on to challenge in the international tournament, the champion, which is, so there's a whole cast of crazy characters.
Imagine it's much like Punch Out, the video game, but
very
with competitive eating.
With competitive eating, there's characters like Chiquita Ortiz, who's this gal from South America who eats like whole chili peppers, is like her thing. She can eat like any spicy food. She has what she calls the deep throat method when she's eating a hot dog.
Oh,
she just like takes
oh
it
no.
One bite. And there's the main villain, the Mike Tyson of this Punch Out scenario, if you will. It's this guy named the Milkman, who's Japanese, who's this albino. dresses in all white, and has this company base that he calls Mother's Milk. That's all about like human milk.
Oh, like, what the?
I'm not the one. I guess I did make it up.
Who else are you going to blame this fucking sick shit on? Wait, you can't blame
it. It's just all sort of the, it's about competitive eating. It's full of, crazy, gross out humor. And basically, it's my attempt to be like the best movie Will Ferrell's never made is this.
And this is going to be coming out from who?
From Zuta.
Okay.
We're going to.
Oh, it's going to be on one. Zuta on one. Okay.
And an artist named Chris Jones, who does stuff for Tokyo Pop, did Battlestar Galactica for them, is doing the Barak the Barbarian book over at Devil's Due. He's going to do the art for it. He and I have been friends for a long time, and I pitched this at him, and he's like, that sounds ridiculous and awesome. And so hopefully it shall be ridiculous and awesome. And
Zuta has done some nice stuff.
I agree.
Bayou, was that the...
Mm-hmm.
Real beautiful, beautiful mm-hmm. comic. And then hadn't Gabe Hardman done some stuff?
Gabe Zuta did a book, yeah. I can't remember what the name of it was, but...
But some of that stuff is now starting to come out in print. Collected print, which is going to be real interesting to see as we start to transition, maybe transition's the wrong word, but as we see more and more web comics go to print and then maybe more people go the web route as opposed to single issues. And
as you begin your forced transition to the internet.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We're all getting herded up.
Yeah, I always thought that...
digital panels instead of death panels.
We're going to start burning books.
Nice.
Yeah. Burning books is next.
We've talked
burning
about
absolutes.
Mail Order Ninja quite a bit in the past. Now, is Mail Order Ninja still coming out as a strip as well?
It's not. It's we're basically just holding on to it. There's still movie stuff floating around it, and until that's resolved one way or another.
Is Jackie Chan still attached to that?
No. Well, I mean, he never was, like, he was interested in it, but he never, like, put his name on it, per se.
Never signed nothing.
Never signed anything. There are people that were attached that I can't really talk about, but,
Come on. It's just
the ghost of Bruce Lee.
It's just the four of us.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yes.
Years after.
Shokasugi.
Yeah.
Shokasugi. That would have been great. I always remember him from Airplane.
Yeah.
He was Victor. Basically, until that's resolved, we are, the thing I'll talk about in a second, this Reading with Pictures organization, we are putting together a benefit book. I'm going to try and do some Mail Order Ninja strips for that, where he's going to fight zombies and overcome them with the power of dance, which is zombies' one weakness. And
of course.
I thought it was the extreme head.
Extreme head trauma?
Yeah.
That's their other only weakness.
Oh, and dance.
And dance.
Okay.
If you're dealing with zombies like in mass, then
dance is your best move.
Oh,
your best
that
rat.
Explains Thriller.
It's, Michael knew what he was doing. That's a survival manual. That's not just a music video.
It's right out of the Max Brooks book, right there.
It is. It's the missing chapter.
Any sort of dance? Any particular style of dance? Is it just any, freestyle?
Well, it's more, a synchronized shuffle of
hip-hop,
some kind or
like
another.
Hip-hop dancing or like foxtrot?
Popping, pop lock.
I can see zombies being in for pop lock. Now, like salsa, stuff like
Does
that, probably not.
Does the robot have any effect? I think the robot's probably just confuses them.
Yeah.
Then they're not, you can run away.
Should I eat this?
They're not,
is this a robot?
Yeah, is this a robot or is this a person? Can I eat it? And then you can run away. But like a tango, that's violent and...
Lambada.
Lambada.
The forbidden dance.
Forbidden. Well, that's...
The Macarena.
I wouldn't recommend the Lambada. The Macarena, with its repetitive movements, I think
Hypnotize
would be ineffective.
Them in
yeah.
some way. And...
They would easily become under your sway.
Macarena.
Hi.
So, I don't know. I'm lost for words.
Sal's breaking in. He hasn't been on the show for a while, so he's getting
rusty.
This is like a guy going from low A up to the major leagues.
I know it's tough getting back in.
He's Bernie Mac and Mr. 3000.
Oh,
poor Bernie.
Yeah, I miss Bernie Mac already.
I don't know if I missed
it. I just brought it down, didn't I? Well, I tell you,
every day, Chris.
And Ted Kennedy.
Yeah. Our liberal lines are gone.
Before we come back, before we come back to what Josh is working on, you guys want to chit chat about some comics we've been reading?
Sure, why not?
All right,
that's what I come here for.
Yeah, Josh, you're up to date on your comics, aren't you?
I try to be.
All right,
yes, sir.
All right. So we're not gonna. It's a Tom. Tom's pulling something out of his bag.
Whoa, it's heavy.
Oh, it's a big book.
It's a big. Whoa, what is that?
It's the collected Teenage Mutant Ninja
Turtles. No way! Yeah. I didn't even know that came out.
Wow,
how sweet!
There was one over
is
there.
Is it over there?
Damn,
it might be gone by now.
I'm gonna go look.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
This is obviously the Mirage.
This is the Mirage. Yeah. This is like the original stuff.
Good stuff.
Mirage finally put out sort of their equivalent, I guess, of what would be the essential Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original run from way back in 84. Stuff that's kind of been hard to find if you're interested in reading it. It hasn't exactly. You can find it on like eBay and stuff and like various trades, but there hasn't really been a new printed big collected edition that's been out there. And it just recently came out a couple weeks ago. In standard Mirage fashion, it's actually been sort of like weird to find.
I had no idea.
Yeah, some people didn't know it came out.
No, I sure wasn't. Yeah. I would have bought it.
Yeah, so it's the black and white original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stuff. The only previous times I've read this is actually when I downloaded stuff off the internet because I know, sorry. But I bought it when it came out, so it works as I tried it. So, and I'm about halfway through it. Actually, a little less than halfway through it, and I've been thoroughly enjoying it.
I love your bookmark.
It's a receipt, a raggy old receipt.
It's a Walgreens receipt.
Yeah, I don't go fancy with it. If you've never read the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stuff, it's definitely not pizza and like cowabunga.
It's much more Daredevil and Frank
Miller. Yeah, it's Frank Miller.
It's a Frank Miller Daredevil parody that isn't exactly funny. It's more of like a...
There's a lot
it's
of
kind
drama
of serious.
To it.
Yeah.
It's serious.
It's more like sci-fi, though, as well.
The stuff with Baxter Stockman.
Very violent, very bloody, but it's talking, fighting Ninja Turtles.
Yep, with a lot of sci-fi elements to it.
Yeah.
Okay, this gets...
The Triceratons shown up yet?
They're coming up.
Okay.
They're coming up. I just got to the part where they broke into a... TCRI at the building, and they teleported somewhere. Awesome.
Oh boy!
Yeah,
so. I had the Fugitoid one shot. I think I still have that at home. I was looking at that the other day. This is geek to the max, though. We used to play the Marvel superheroes role playing game.
So say we all.
And my friends and I made the the TMNT universe and adapted it to the Marvel superheroes role playing game. And
so you didn't have the TMNT game that was compatible with, I believe, GURPS. The general universe
loser.
We probably
come on.
Did I think we had?
That's what real role players played.
No? Well, you guys remember Car Wars? That was another
sure.
Car Wars was awesome.
That was a GURPS.
Was it a GURPS
system? Yeah. I believe.
Okay. But of course,
pretty much
generic universal role playing system for those that.
We haven't talked about this on the show.
Yes.
But you, sir, Brian Salazar, out of all of us, the biggest role-playing nerd out of the entire group.
Probably, yeah. I was a huge role-playing nerd.
I used to play Battletech competitively.
You're a bigger nerd. That blows me away.
What?
I just had a group of friends I played with. I played a shit ton of role-playing games. I made up. We had created our own role-playing games at one point.
You ever play Star Frontier?
Yes.
Love that.
Star Frontier. I played more than I can remember, quite honestly. But Dungeons and Dragons was probably the main one. And then Heroes and Villains and Marvel Universe. Heroes and Villains was a good system. And then GURPS, the nice thing about GURPS is it was this generic system that you could create
any type of game
you want with it. So we kind of did that.
GURPS?
Yeah,
GURPS.
Generic Universal Role-Playing System. And it was a great system that you could convert to any kind of game.
Aliens versus Predator years before Hollywood ruined it.
GURPS
was there.
GURPS
planted
its flag early there.
I played a lot.
Yeah, I mean that was when I was growing up, it was it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Mage. And Marvel superheroes role playing game.
In my 20s, I tried to go back and play again.
It's tough.
It was weird because it was really easy at that point. Like, you could just outthink the system, and like, I was killing dragons with, like, you know, low level clerics because you could just, like, you, it was really weird. It was, and I was like, oh, this isn't nearly as fun as it once
See,
was.
That's why I like playing HeroClix when that debuted, because I think the math was a lot harder and it wasn't nearly as easy to game the system. And it was a lot more competitive game, no matter who you were playing with or how old you were.
I love HeroClix because there's a much more of a chess element to it.
Yeah,
it's not really a matter of that, and the game is organic because as soon as there, you know, are quote unquote, you know, broken pieces or broken rules, they would rework the rules and new stuff until.
See, I was much more into the actual role playing of
yeah,
games.
This is
I
really
played with
more
like
strategic.
These guys that were like theater majors in college, and so it was it was really interesting, like. I mean, they really got
Hello.
Into play. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, everybody did. I mean,
I would play a ball and everything would be in song.
No, it was. I mean, no shit. Guys were like, there was a guy that wrote songs as a bard and played guitar. And I mean, it was pretty hardcore. I went to Gen Con with these guys 1 year.
Did it ever escalate to LARPing?
No, never did. Never did.
You can tell us.
I would. I have no secrets. Believe me.
I was in a role, an RPG band. No, I'm kidding.
Now, Gen Con. This is before Gen Con was in Indy. It was up in
Milwaukee.
For years. Yeah. Right?
And I went there when it
was
in Milwaukee.
My first convention I ever went to was Gen Con. I had never been to a comic book convention before that, and like I said, I hung out with these guys. I actually worked for. I worked at a movie theater, and the son of the owner of the movie theater, who was also the projectionist, he was a few years older than I was, but him and all his friends, who were all like in college, and most of them were, you know, in theater groups and stuff, they all played, and I started playing with them, and then we ended up going up to Gen Con 1 year, and yeah, it was kind of weird. It was cool. I mean, it was cool for, but they got into it. I mean, they got into it, like, hardcore. But no, never nothing beyond the actual, you know, playing
sitting at
the
a
game.
Table.
Sitting at a table for, like, you know, 18, 19 hours straight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's seriously.
I'd get frustrated. And fuck this.
Well, growing up in Southern Illinois, it was, you know,
there's nothing else to do.
Well, one of the funnest things to do was,
besides,
you know,
drown
go,
in a
go,
mine.
You know, go over to a friend, go to a friend's house, and it was... order pizza and drink soda and role play for 14 hours. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Our normal thing was like a Friday night, and we would start at like 8 o'clock, and we wouldn't finish until like noon the next.
Wow.
The next, you know, Saturday. Yeah.
How long did it take for you guys to become Satanists? How long did the 18 hours before you sacrificed a baby?
But it was, the cool thing about that group was that they were very well prepared, so it was never like. It was never like downtime of like figuring out what we were doing, and like you would get there and it was on.
They were ready to go.
They were ready to go, and like these
guys.
Who was
the dungeon master?
There were a couple, and they would like team up. There would be like two or three people that would like design, you know, a game and
basically make their own modules.
Absolutely. Yeah. And wow. They like, were work on it together.
The crappy standard modules.
The one guy.
Fuck that.
The one guy.
It's for posers.
This guy's name was John Merrick. The
Elephant Man?
Yeah. And he was phenomenal. He was
So you role play game.
I role played with the Elephant Man. No, but he used to get pissed if you ever mentioned the Elephant Man. Because it was spelled differently, but
I'm not an animal.
I'm not the Elephant Man.
But he was amazing. I mean, the guy did voices and was super creative and really, you know, got into it, and it was cool. I mean, you know, I was like, how old I was at that point. I was probably like 14 or 15 years old, and
the golden age of role playing. Right there.
Might not even been.
Oh
that.
Yeah, 1984, yeah. 86. Yeah, I mean that's.
And I actually, it was funny when we went to Gen Con. We were camping, and there was like
Let me play this huge song.
I can't remember where it was at, but it was like this big campground, and everybody that was going to the convention, there was tons of people there that were camping, and you would get together and like. These big people would bring these big gigantic like house tent things, and you would get together with like a huge group of people and role play, you know, in the middle of the night camping. But we actually, like, there were guys that had worked for TSR and had like designed. I can't remember the guys. There was two guys, and they both had design modules, and they like we played with them as dungeon masters. It was as a super gaming nerd.
So how does it work? Like if you went to a convention, let's say you had the group of guys that you usually role play game with, and you get into this big area where a bunch of people are going, like what, like how do you organize that? Like if there's like
to play,
yeah. Like what happens?
It was just sort of like you would just get into a, you know, one of these. Like I said, you would have 25, 30 people in a room, in a tent.
So everyone would make their character right then,
yeah.
Or whatever.
Or they, you know, inherit someone, just pick a, you know, an NPC type that had already defined stats.
Yeah, you were loosely just like quickly getting something together.
Like, you know, who wants to be the dwarves?
Yeah.
You know, because you got to have a couple dwarves.
Who
maybe,
wants to be the dwarves?
Maybe
who wants
a halfling. To be a dwarf?
We need a cleric.
I'll be the bard.
Yeah, everyone hated to be the cleric usually because all you got to do was buff other people up. And cast
Fuck that. I was a warrior priest, motherfucker. Shit up. I had a mace.
Backstory.
And
What was your favorite alignment?
Oh, God, I don't remember.
Chaotic good.
Chaotic neutral or chaotic, I don't remember.
Yeah, you were a chaotic neutral.
I don't remember,
you
quite
could go
honestly.
Either way. You could go
either way at any time, no one could predict it.
Yeah, kind of. I don't remember. I honestly couldn't tell you. I don't remember anymore.
Just to swing both ways. That's fine.
Yeah, well,
that's cool.
I dabbled. I tried a couple times to get into role playing games. I just don't think that I had like the patience for it. No. Or when I was a kid, I just sort of I was just kind of like, oh, I don't
don't have the time. For
I don't.
This shit.
Just, yeah, I just don't.
The key, you know,
see,
what's
I would
kind
think
of
you
fun.
Would be actually very good at it because you, you know,
Tom would, yeah, just the, be, you know, kind of
I really liked making characters, but I didn't like having to go through like caves to fight dragons. I was like, this just seems sort of dull. You know, like this is the most boring story I've ever been involved in.
You had to have a good group. Yeah. You had to have a good DM.
Yeah. It's always sort of boring. I liked making the character, but
no, that was always sometimes
about
the
an
best
hour
part.
Into it, I'd be like. Why am I still in a cave? What, can I do something? No,
see,
you're
really,
in this cave.
See, like I said, the group that I played were phenomenally creative.
I was with the wrong group.
Yeah, and they, I mean, it was insane. Like, they had, because they had been playing together for years, and they had, like, storylines where you would run into their old characters.
They had continuity.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, yeah, they did.
Wow.
And shit, like, I mean, that's how these guys, how hardcore they, like, you would run into, like, their old characters. And, you know, and they would play those old characters and you would need them, you know, you would have to, you know, work with them or whatever, or they would be, you know, complete assholes or, you know, whatever their character
was.
That's
awesome.
But yeah, they had continuity in this game system. It was crazy. I mean, it was, they were, like I said, they were really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, once I like hit high school,
it's hard because you can't go home again. You know, it's
like I said, I tried playing years later with some friends that I used to play with, and it just wasn't.
Has anyone done a podcast of a live role playing game?
Fuck, you'd have to pick a really simple one. You know,
I'm gonna have to look it up.
God, that would be
boring.
I think.
Listen, if there's anything we've shown with doing 250 episodes of this,
it would be kind of funny.
Is that? People will listen
to anything.
To anything.
All right. If you want to see the funniest role-playing game-related things that I've ever encountered on the net, this guy went through Lord of the Rings treating it like a D&D game, and he would take screen caps and he put word bubbles in. So, you know, everyone has a character, and Frodo and Sam go off on this side quest, and, you know, Gandalf is just a random wizard. And then they did the same thing with the Phantom Menace, and it's fantastic. Like, you have no idea. Like, this, the DM in the Phantom Menace is like the Jedi, who are this special class, are, you know, get out their laser swords, and they're getting shot at by the droids. And he's like, I deflect the laser bolt with my laser sword. And he's like, you can't do that. And this other guy's like, well, no, according to the physics that you set up, you totally could. And they have this, like, totally, it's like, this is totally a gamer conversation right here.
See, that was the shit I hated. Like I said, the group I played with, it was much more about the role-playing aspect of it and almost sort of like, you know.
Than the game rules.
The rule. Yeah, I mean, they obviously followed the rules, but it wasn't about that. You know what I mean? It was much more about a story.
I can,
like,
deflect
play.
A laser with my laser sword,
yeah.
According to the physics that you have previously set up.
You know, I don't want to do that. You know, but
no rules.
I think it'd be kind of funny
it.
to try and, like, you know,
let's all get together,
do a like Marvel superheroes game or something. That'd be kind of funny.
And this all came from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
So sorry, pick it up. No, I was done.
I definitely want to pick that up. I love that. Yeah.
How much was that?
$29.95.
That's totally worth it.
Yeah,
that's
nice
totally
paper.
Yep.
And I
what,
kind of
do you know what it goes up to? Like what issues?
It, it goes. It contains TMNT number 1 through 11, but it also contains
what?
The Raphael one shot, the Fugitoid number 1, Michelangelo number 1, Donatello number 1, and Leonardo number 1. So all the one shot.
Cool.
That is pretty hot.
So it's about like 17, it's 600 pages.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And it's like 50 cents a page.
You can see the art get significant.
Quick math.
You can see the art gets significantly better as you go through the issues, because you can see that issue number 1 came out in May 1984, issue number 2 came out in October 1984, issue number 3 came out in March 1985. So there's a little bit of space in between. You can see the art get better, and it sort of reminds me towards the end, as I'm looking ahead, of the stuff I really like from like Scott Collins a little bit in a weird way.
Yeah, yeah, I can
like
see
a little
that.
Bit
yeah,
of that that sort of like looseness to it, but the sort of interesting action parts to it.
I wonder
it's
when
cool.
I wonder when Jenkins came on as an editor. Wasn't he an editor?
That
there?
Was way after, like, way after the, when it blew up from the cartoon and stuff.
Yeah, that
and
was,
it's weird
that was
when
more
they were just spending money.
It's black
on
and white, like it was when it first
originally
came out. And it's weird to see the turtles without the colored headbands if you were first introduced to them via the cartoon, because at first you're kind of like, how the fuck do I keep track of anyone?
I still have a few of the
you know
original
by their weapons
issues.
Well, yeah, but it takes a little bit to get used to that being the cue, and the fact that Raphael really is the only one with a personality for like the first
badass
like 6 issues.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
slowly
yeah
everyone else sort of.
Well, he was Wolverine. Yeah,
Wolverine.
You guys want to do some voicemails?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, hold on.
Email.
Can I see that?
Yeah.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start a free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 per month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no late fees ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service with my Xbox 360 and personal laptop and love it. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today.
That day I'll always remember. Yes, I will. Cause there was a day that my daddy died.
All right. Voicemail. If you want to drop the show a line, you can certainly do so by calling 1-888-977-5903. And this is from Not Fester.
Not Fester.
Not Fester.
Fester still leaving voicemail?
Yeah, hey, this is Not Fester again.
Sounds like Fester.
Yeah, last time I called, and, you know, before I called, I had something that I thought was pretty fucking funny. And then
famous last
the message,
words.
You know, I get the beat, and all of a sudden I forgot it all. And instead of being
is it a skit?
Trying to be clever on the fly, which is not my forte.
Get a notepad.
I said, fuck it, and hung up. But anyway.
That's what that was.
Guy who's never been to a con before, go listen to episode 122, con 101 from the Scotty Young era of Around Comics. I think I think they still had a format at that point too.
Fuck you.
Before they
you do 250
shut
episodes
it down before they began their New Testament. So yeah, check that out. There's plenty of information there. I remember Scotty gave some good information on getting sketches and shit like that. And I think Neesman gave some advice on how to pack for a con.
Which his advice is bring
yeah,
everything
sure
you own.
All right.
In case they're there.
Bye-bye.
Yes.
Bring
yes
lots of hardcovers with you.
Pack everything.
And pack everything.
And a lot of hand sanitizer. So, yes, episode 122 is our Comics 101 on convention going. So how to prepare for a comics convention.
And awesome.
I've actually had a lot of questions about that here of late, of people wanting to go back and find that episode.
What? So. How do you get ready to go to a con?
A shower.
You shower. You bring clothes. You try not to act like an ass. Try.
Lots of money.
You
lots
will.
Of money. More
lots
money.
Lots of
than
money.
I,
cash.
Yeah, a lot of cash.
Make sure the flask is filled up.
Yeah.
That was not Fester. Here is Fester.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, no. It's a character.
What's Fester. Up, you sexy mofos? This is Fester from Lansing, Michigan. What's crack-a-lackin'? Okay, I've got a little, I don't want to say a little tidbit, I guess, a theory. Uh-oh. After reading the newest Green Lantern. Okay, they're talking about the Star Sapphires and how, if I remember correctly, I don't have it with me because I'm driving.
Settle down, Fester.
I thought that Queen Lady had said something about the two bodies that are in the central battery of the Star Sapphires.
That's the same theory I told you.
Were removed from Earth and put on Zamorant. If that's the case, do you think maybe those two skeletons, since time travel is not anything new to sci-fi and or comic books,
I'm lost.
Do you think it's possible that those two bodies could be the bodies of Hal and Carol Ferris?
No.
From the future?
No.
Their love for each other was so strong that it...
It's Adam and Eve.
The circle is complete.
It's Hawkman and Hawkwoman, I think, the original.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, take care, you guys.
I didn't know it.
Bye. I shouldn't yell wrong. Like, wrong. No, you're
idiots.
Wrong.
Moron.
I guess it could be.
How
first
ridiculous
all,
is that?
I want to say that Fester has actually turned into one of my favorite voicemailers because...
He's like the only.
No, but he was for a long time because he was the only one that actually went to the website and saw the
Chris
number.
Because Chris was giving the wrong number. For a long time.
So Fester's theory is that the power battery for the sapphires, the love lanterns, is Hal and Carol, maybe
exciting
from the future. But you think it's
Hawkman and Hawkwoman,
Carter and
the original ones from way back in.
Well, because their
times.
Whole thing about love and it kills them when they love each other and
they get reborn, et cetera.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Yeah, and Johns wrote all that stuff too. He made all that stuff.
I could see that.
Yeah. I think that makes sense.
Sure. I think you're right. That's it.
John's write it that way.
Yes, he's just waiting to hear what you think so he could write it.
Here's a guy who's probably left us 40 voicemails, but 38 of them have been unintelligible.
It's David Price.
It's an Englishman, isn't it?
No, it's more because of the audio quality, but this is Ted from Indiana. Sorry.
Hello.
Here we go. It's Ted from Indiana.
Hey, that's Ted from Indiana. Hey, you guys are talking about Tom vs. the Flash, maybe doing a show called Tom vs. Aquaman.
No.
I was wondering, how come no one's ever done a Aquaman versus Submariner? Because I think Submariner totally kicked Aquaman's ass.
You'd be wrong.
Okay, thank you very much. Great show. Okay, bye.
Didn't they fight in the...
They did fight in DC versus Marvel.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm sure JLA Avengers, I'm sure there's a Aquaman, Submariner.
I think Submariner would win that battle. Aquaman's lame.
Aquaman,
Tom
is gonna, Aquaman
is Tom
an
is
effective...
Tom is going to kick you in the fucking
Aquaman's
teeth.
Aquaman's an effective monarch. Namor can never keep his shit together.
Well, this is true, but that, you know,
he's
that's
always,
why
he always
he's
wants
more
to bang like
anger.
Human chicks.
Well,
while Aquaman is, he knows where his place is.
He's a pure blood.
Yeah, it's under, you know,
Mara.
Exactly. Right? Get down.
But
down
she's from another dimension. She's not even an Atlantean either.
Yeah. Oh, look at the big brain on Josh.
True.
Who came first?
Wow.
Aquaman, Golden.
Well,
Golden,
no, Submariner
might be
Submariner's
first,
way first.
Yeah.
Like Aquaman's pretty old, but
49, I think.
Yeah, Submariner's
Aquaman.
The World War II era. It's
Did Aquaman fight Nazis?
Just
asking. I'm just asking. I don't know. Did he fight?
He was blonde. He didn't need to.
That's true. Well, all right.
He was the Aryan of the sea.
It's the Aryan prince.
He's a pureblood Aryan of the sea.
How do you guys like the treatment of the Aquaman family in Blackest Night?
It made me want
a dead
Jeff
Aquaman
Johns
book?
To write an Aquaman book, because I was like, oh, Aquaman can be kind of interesting.
Speaking of Johns, you know, I got a little bone to pick with Jeff Johns.
Did he steal something from you?
No, he didn't steal anything from me. But he pissed me off a little bit because he's writing the screenplay, supposedly, for the Shazam movie.
And you've been wanting
and
him
I've
to
been,
write the
Shazam. Yeah, where's Shazam Rebirth, God damn it! Come on. It's a character that really could use a fucking, you know, retelling, or, you know...
That can't write everything.
He can write everything. He's got time to write a screenplay, obviously, but not a book.
I wonder how that Shazam movie is going to...
I don't think it'll happen. I mean, Hollywood just can't wrap their brain around it, and it would
comics can't wrap their brain around.
Well, sure.
That
I mean, the moment that you
it's
brought
not dark enough
Captain Marvel into any other shared universe, he doesn't work really anymore. Except
he has to change. He has to got to become. He Hipper. Needs like an edge because the whole
The Rock.
Yeah, he needs no, you have to add something else to it. Like as soon as he has to interact,
they have
with,
to
like,
get rid of him being a little boy. Is what they need to get rid of.
Well, then he's not Captain Marvel anymore.
Sure, he is.
He's just a doopier Superman.
No, not necessarily. I just think the whole thing of him turning into a 12-year-old boy is sort of.
I think it works better in comics than it does. I think in a movie, it's hard to not make it.
Childish.
I think it's going to be a hard sell because Captain Marvel really, I think, is. Designed to be sort of a kid's idea, but I think it's going to be hard.
It's a Pixar movie.
Yeah, Pixar
would
be great.
I think
they
great
job
with
great.
It. It's a Pixar movie.
I think it's going to be hard to sell a live action.
Yeah,
it's just too kiddy for like
Pixar
adults.
Awesome.
But I think it's too.
Well, that's why I think you make him not. I mean, if Peter Parker can be Spider-Man and he's a high school kid and then early college age, why couldn't you do the same thing with Shazam? Why does he have to be a child?
I just think it's important that Talkie Tawny be involved in a sort of Shazam movie.
No one's going to argue that.
There needs to be a foppish tiger in a suit walking around that no one questions.
With a rocket pack.
Yeah, just like, it's Talkie Tawny. He just walks around.
Grant Morrison spoiled me because that tiger should always have a rocket pack now.
Yeah, always. He always needs to have a rocket booster on him. All tigers
always.
Do. Have you guys ever read the Golden Age Shazam in like the 70s when they brought him back in the 70s,
the
Golden
Key stuff?
Yeah,
similar in
or no, I'm sorry, Fawcett.
The Fawcett.
And they're putting out the Monster Society of Evil as like a trade pretty soon.
Yeah. They're doing the DC library classics. Yeah, they're doing the original Monster Society from way back in the day. The showcase showing the 70s stuff. I know a lot of people that are like big purists about the Fawcett stuff don't like the 70s relaunch, but I actually kind of think it fits. Like if you like that stuff, you also enjoy that stuff. And I also kind of thought that Ordway didn't do a bad job trying to make it fit. Like it wasn't quite Captain Marvel like in the 90s, but I think he did tell interesting stories. Obviously Captain Marvel always has the problem of like either people who really like the old Captain Marvel won't like anything that you do to it, and people who want like a badass Captain Marvel won't accept a lot of the portions of Captain Marvel that make Captain Marvel who he is. So it's he's always kind of stuck in between. Like it's hard to quite figure out how to get him to fit in, I think.
I think he could do it.
That's my own theory.
I could
Captain
do it.
Marvel.
All right.
It's my own
I'll write
Captain
it.
Marvel.
I'm going to write a fan fiction Captain Marvel.
Let me see. I forget what this one. This is from Maddie.
Matthew. Hey, Ron Comics. My name is Maddie Jets, and I wanted to call and say that I'm new to the show. I really like it. Niesman, I listened to you on this and around 11 o'clock. I think you are the saving grace of 11 o'clock. Something I wanted to bring up, though, as a big Green Lantern and Swamp Thing fan, do you guys remember Paul from Swamp Thing? I love the episode you guys talked about, the original book one. Well, if anybody could be another Green Lantern, it's that kid Paul all grown up, because I know he overcame some super fear for beating the Monkey King.
Right, right.
I've been drinking, and I've been thinking, and that's what I came up with. Love your show. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you, Maddie.
We always
Jets.
Suggest that you drink. And
that's
think.
A quality voicemail right there.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. He's drinking, he's thinking, and he's got an idea for a new Green Lantern. Josh, have you read the original Alan Moore run on Swamp Thing?
Of course.
So you know the Monkey King story of which Maddie talks about?
That's like one of the only comics that ever scared the shit out of me was the Monkey King one. I don't know if it was like just the... It's just weird. I hate it when things are super scary that originally don't look like they should really be all that frightening.
And it is frightening.
Being like really King. Frightening.
Monkey King's King. Like a stuffed animal, but he's still like, it's still really disturbing and screwed up.
Yes. I don't. I'm sorry.
So I agree. He overcame great fear. Much willpower in that.
Did
young
Paul
man.
Ever show up again? I don't know that character ever.
Well, he was one of the people at the institution where she worked, right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, she got fired pretty soon after that.
Spoilers.
Because
that's a huge plot point in the books.
They took the photos of her making out with Swamp Thing, and then she got hauled into Gotham City with a surprise appearance by Sergeant Harvey Bullock.
I think it's funny to think of like a world where like someone's getting fired from their job after making out with a swamp creature.
Yeah.
And like the question isn't like it's just acceptable enough that it's question instead of just being like this is fake. Like there is no such thing as swamp creatures.
This is just unacceptable.
Yeah, like we know swamp things exist and you shouldn't be making
really,
out with them.
You know,
you shouldn't be eating tubers. All right.
No one should be.
I'm looking for when is the second volume of that coming out?
I don't know.
I'm ready for more. I'm ready for more.
Should be soon. I don't know what they're waiting on.
That is one of the best things I've read this year. I really enjoyed doing that as a book club selection. That was your pick, wasn't it, Sal?
Yes.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. I'm ready for more. Even though I do have some Starman I need to catch up on. I'm still getting ready to
read the third.
I know, there's too much to keep up with. Oh, let me see here. We're going through a lot of emails.
Voicemails?
Hello, AT crew. Hi. This is Ulysses Antosado. Ulysses would like to thank you for the recent Iron Man-centric programming. Very much appreciated it. Enjoyed it. Listened to it at work. Ulysses would also like to talk about sound effects in comics.
And Ulysses is
urge
high.
The letterers
allegedly
not to add sound effects if they are not necessary. If sound effects are not to clarify a
holy
panel,
shit.
this should be banned. And Ulysses would also like to talk about the latest Archie number 600.
What?
In which he timed.
I don't even know what to do right now.
It was rather trippy. And,
trippy.
Ulysses would like to thank you for everything that you do. And Ulysses would like to go to work now. Bye.
In that condition, I don't think you should be.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of people are making the big deal about Archie proposing to Veronica, but I thought
Archie 600 just came out.
But I also think the weirder part of that issue is the part where Moose kills that homeless guy.
Well, he had it coming.
Yeah, I mean, the full page spread of Moose on top of this guy just strangling choking the life out of him.
That was awesome.
Archie
was going down memory lane thinking about his high school years and decided to see what was up memory lane. So he started walking into his future. And so it's a flash forward story about him proposing Betty, correct?
Veronica.
Oh, which one's which?
Veronica, dark hair, Betty, blonde hair.
Yes. Always go with the brunette.
Yeah, so this
crazy
is
in the head.
Crazy in bed.
I have not.
She's rich too, so you know you got that.
I have not read it, but I hear that this is going to be a 4-issue, 6-issue.
See now,
story.
If it's a flash forward situation, I assume they're going to show him also marrying Betty as well.
Divorce Veronica.
Future.
I think yes, he will.
Alternate. Future.
He will have alternate realities.
Listen, I know that there are Archie fans out there that are upset about this whole thing, but quite honestly, you're fucking lucky that Archie's still being made.
Oh, dude. You know what just about the number one selling book in comics is?
No.
Sonic.
Archie Digest?
Yeah, well, okay.
I would think that it's Jughead's Double Digest, I would say. It's probably... I love Jughead.
It's twice as much Jughead for the money.
They've got a different deal than Marvel, DC, those guys. But Archie consistently.
Who the fuck is buying Archie?
Over 100,000.
My friend Greg is still continually shoplifting copies of Archie from grocery stores.
I mean, they're still mass market. Ridiculous sales.
Well, parents,
I think it's all bullshit.
If you're gonna pick up something for like a 6-year-old girl, like seriously, that's
Archie.
Archie,
bullshit. Yeah.
I'm telling
you. I have a six-year-old. Well, she's seven.
Archie's still very minor.
Well, you've been giving your daughter Wolverine.
Fables and you're DMZ. I gave her, you know, the Ultimates the other day.
You're an abnormal parent. Now, I won't say that.
No. Archie?
Archie still
people
does
who don't know anything
well.
Who don't know anything about comics, for as a rule, that's the thing they will grab.
That's like child abuse.
All right.
What's your problem with Jughead, man?
That's you know
he's
that's
pothead.
You know that's Brubaker's dream is to retire writing Jughead comics. True, he said it on our show.
He is Jughead.
It's the flashback.
He
show.
Does wear the hat constantly.
All right, here's an oldie but a goodie.
Hello, Around Comics. This is Cameron Cammy Knoxville Hathaway calling you from San Diego, California.
Hey, Cammy.
The reason I'm calling is I just got back from the Superheroes Ball, which was being thrown as a fundraiser new Children's Art Museum here in San Diego. It was for a great cause. People were donating all this money. And the theme was superheroes, so I could not pass it up. And plus, some friends hooked me up with some tickets. My friends being Aquaman and Mera. I'm serious. People were dressed up
it's a as theme.
Aquaman and Mera. And then I saw Dr. Manhattan dancing with Silk Spectre, and Batman and Captain America just shooting shit. And, oh, did I mention that it was open bar? Yeah, that's why I'm calling you, because afterwards...
Can anyone call us sober?
Yeah, no shit.
Disco and donuts party downstairs in the Children's Museum, and it was fantastic. So I'm calling and letting you know that if you are in San Diego and you want to support the arts, go to the Children's, the new Children's Art Museum
in
San Diego. It's fantastic. Probably should have been left for 11 o'clock comics, but hey, you know, you guys are all the same. Whatever. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Please do not put us in the same boat as those fucking guys.
Cammy's drunk off his ass there.
Well, speaking of museums that have comics, over in Indianapolis, far closer than San Diego, there's the Children's Museum there. Just wrapped up a big exhibit on comics that I was a special advisor for. I actually had a Mail Order Ninja whole exhibit in there, which was super awesome. But they are making it a part of the permanent collection because it was so popular. So they've got, for a while there, they had one of the tumblers. I don't think they're going to still have that from Batman Begins. But they had one of Adam West's outfits. They had one of Christopher Reeve's capes. They had this huge, pretty impressive collection that was donated of like 40,000 comics that are just available for kids to like pick up and read and stuff. It's pretty cool. Awesome. And there's all sorts of very cool actual artifacts on display there and
fossils,
interactive things.
Like Jack Kirby's bones?
Yes, that's
big zoom. Happy birthday, Jack. It's his birthday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's his birthday.
His arms are like this. The statue, short forearms.
Can't see his tongue. They can't see.
I know. I'm doing it to you.
He's surrounded by Kirby crackle.
There's crackle everywhere.
That's fine.
You can.
Well, you know. Thanks for all the emails this week. Very entertaining.
Voicemails.
Thank you guys. Or I keep calling them emails. Thanks for all, thanks for all the voicemails this week. But on that
call
subject,
back when you're sober.
Episode 250 when the Alzheimer's
actually Cammy did call back and clarify that that voicemail, but we'll just let it ride. But Josh, you are still incredibly involved in bringing comics to kids.
Yes, sir.
It's a big part of your daily life.
Lot of time around schools,
playgrounds, just cruising around, just you know, getting out of the neighborhood.
Driving his Camaro.
I got a whole van filled with. I've got a sweeter song than the birds in the tree.
We just recently announced the formation of this nonprofit organization called Reading with Pictures, and we are working in conjunction with Diamond and with Northwestern University to facilitate and study the use of comics in the classroom. That is, our remit is pretty broad. Mm-hmm. It's all about just promoting comics in the classroom, however that goes. But the initial thing that we're doing, the big thing that we're sort of selling this organization on, is Northwestern's Learning Sciences Department is putting together the single largest clinical study on comics and education that's ever been done.
Wow.
As far as we know, one of the biggest that's ever been done in the world, certainly the biggest in the United States.
What comics are they using?
Well, we're figuring that out now.
It's all Grant Morrison ones, and yes. The kids are all turning out just weird.
We don't know yet. A lot of it depends on what the publishers will work with us on, because it has to be, if we're going to do this, we're going to be conducting large-scale quantitative surveys of what exists now with teachers, find out what publishers have done, what they want to see. And then a lot of it is we have to be able to give these books to the schools, because they're taking a big risk on letting us in to conduct basically an experiment in their classroom. Do comics work? And
well, I would personally like you to pick a few, just so I know what happened to me. If you could pick like Alien Legion.
Okay.
And American Flag would be good.
No. That's the experiment that they're going for. Okay.
I just want to know why, Josh. I want to know why.
That science, I don't think, can answer.
No. why you're so scarred.
But yeah, we over the next 6 months or so, our big sort of coming out party is going to be at the C2E2 next year. And leading up to that, we're going to be organizing an art auction. And a benefit book, and doing a membership drive, much like the CLBDF does, to be a part of this. And then leading into that, we'll be doing a lot of surveys, stuff behind the scenes, and then we're going to be starting the experiments and doing things like building a database of teachers that use comics in the classroom now and have, say, built lesson plans for these books. But all these things all exist in isolation. And there's people that would say want to use some Jeff Smith bone, or would want to use Mildred Ninja or whatever, but they don't have the time to build a lesson plan. Well, somebody probably already has. We're going to collect all those in one place. You can upload the stuff you've done. You can download stuff other people have done. You can make changes or make notes on them, re-upload them back up. It'll be a wiki format. You know, very simple things like that that no one has had the incentive to create, but stuff that can have transformative effects on using comics in the classroom in this country.
Nice. Well, Sal, you had read like the Illustrated Constitution.
Yeah.
Which was, you really enjoyed.
Yeah, it was cool. It was it was a real, you know, straightforward sort of telling of the history and the making of the U.S. Constitution, and it was done by guys that they had done another one too.
Those are the 9/11 report guys.
Yes, I think it was the same guys. And I didn't read the 9/11 report one, but the U.S. Constitution one was interesting. I mean, especially for, you know, something as sort of that can be very boring,
dry,
you know, as history lessons.
Didn't the military use comics in World War II?
Well, sure. Will Eisner drew, you know, all sorts of manuals and stuff.
Disney stayed alive because they did movies. Animated movies of stuff like that
for them. I mean, it was a lot of instructive stuff, because it's I mean, you can show, like, Will Eisner, what he would do is you could show like the inside of a engine, you know, you couldn't show that with a picture or a movie or anything else, but he could blow it up, or you could show it from any angle inside of an engine or whatever to teach guys how to fix something.
Sure. And the retention level. Easier. You know, but, you know, and then what?
Not to get the clap when you're in Germany. You know, that kind of stuff.
Don't put this there.
I want that comic. I want that comic. But, this sounds like that is kind of taking that base idea that comics can be used as an educational tool and expanding on that. And you know, I'm sure this gets into, like, reading comprehension.
I'm actually doing a couple articles right now for PBS that will be looking at comics as reading, how they help reading comprehension, and how you can use them to teach creative writing, stuff that I've done in classrooms, and now we're just expanding on it and formalizing, creating like formal texts for it. And I've been talking with Matt Mann and Jessica Abel, who did a great book called Reading, Drawing Words and Writing Pictures, which is a great how-to guide based on they are professors in the Metropolitan School of Art in New York, and it's essentially their textbook. And we're looking at working with them to create stuff, cartooning classes that are aimed at high schools, things like that. So we've got all sorts of very cool things mm-hmm. going. And if any teachers are listening to this, we are right now looking for people to be a part of this. Any people who are looking to volunteer, who do web programming, who can help us build that wiki I was talking about, we're looking for people like you.
And how do they get in contact with you?
You get in contact with me. I'm the executive director of the organization, so everything will end up on my desk eventually anyway. So you can go ahead and contact me directly at elder, E-L-D-E-R, 1938 at gmail.com.
And you're if old. You and if you
1938, Jesus.
When Batman.
Action Comics number one, actually.
Okay, I was gonna say that's Duh. Light Detective.
nerd.
That's also the same year that Denny O'Neill was born. So there, suck it.
Suck on
that's
me.
One up on me.
have you but, seen but, a, but if you guys didn't jot that down, you can email me at chris@aroundcomics.com and I can forward that to Josh.
So all right. Or you could just rewind the podcast and
that's
listen to
also
it
a possibility.
Just give people options.
Please email Chris. He just wants to hear from
he
you.
Just wants to be in the loop.
I need contact.
Have
I
you there's a website, and I can't remember the name of it, but I think it's like Comics in Classrooms or something
comics
like that.
Comics in the Classroom.
Yeah, that I had seen before that seemed like a pretty good resource for some of that stuff. It seemed like it was, you know, kind of what you're trying to do on a smaller scale. I think it was like one teacher that sort of started gathering stuff, but I thought maybe that was a good starting point at least. Or
we're talking with them and this other group called the Graphic Classroom. And the part of the reason that we're trying to build the organization we're trying to build is that there are a lot of people like that who are doing really good work, but their resources are fundamentally limited because they're individuals who have other jobs. So this is a side project, and it's like them and one maybe one other person if they're lucky. And this is going to be, once it ramps up, pretty much between myself and the person who's going to be doing our grant writing and is kind of acting as the operations officer of the organization. Absolutely my girlfriend. But between the two of us, we'll be basically working full-time on this, hopefully by around January, February of next year. And we can do a lot. And we can do a lot just by bringing together all of this other stuff that's already out there. But again, no one has either the time, the resources, or the incentive to do that right now. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they do great work. They are one of the first people to review Mail Order Ninja, in fact, back when I was making the rounds with that. And that's how I met a lot of these people, was I found, well, who are the people who can get me into schools, who can get me into libraries? And it was those people. But I said, if we really want to take this if we really make this big, we've got to create a central clearinghouse for everything. Because there's a lot of data out there, but it's never been aggregated.
It's not centralized.
It's not centralized. It's not curated. Mm. You know, there's a lot of very interesting facts out there, but no one's ever organized them so that anyone knows how to get them or can get them to them easily, even if they know they exist.
Right.
So that's our first step, which we think will be transformative. You know, anytime you do information technology, you make it easier for other people to do more work and to do better work. And so just by doing this, we're going to drastically change the whole landscape of comics research, because it'll be much easier just to start. And then we're going to be funding and facilitating massive research projects of our own. And then resources for teachers, for parents, and hopefully creating major financial incentives for publishers to produce more and better comics for kids, and to include things like curriculum guides or, you know, stuff that, you know, vocabulary lists, things like that, that are, you know, par for the course when it comes to novels aimed at middle grades or aimed at, you know, elementary. Right. That's what you do, you know, because you want to get into that market. But comics, they don't understand it. And B, even when they try, it fails. You know, I've worked at DC, you know, inside when I was an editorial intern, a publicity intern.
We heard how that internship ended.
I'd rather not talk about that. I'm in a different phase of my life now. But no, and then on the outside writing, you know, for the kids' books, and they don't get it. And it's even when they do get it, even when they do believe in it, like Jan Jones was a big champion and made a lot of series happen just on her own force of will at DC, like Tiny Titans and the Shazam book and stuff like that, the Supergirl in the eighth grade, that now that she's gone, those are all kind of dying on the vine. And even when they were going, yeah, they were, I like them.
What do you think? I mean, obviously the big publishers, you know, their incentive for making kids books are because it's limited because the market that they cultivate is not kids. But
right.
Why does it seem that you don't see more of independent publishers or independent creators making stuff for kids? I mean, you would think it would be something that, you know, they would see as a market that they could get into easier than the superhero market.
Well, I mean, we were talking about one earlier. I mean, Archie still going strong.
Yeah.
Still going
Fuck Archie.
Still going strong.
Fuck Archie. I don't know who publishes Archie.
Archie does. I'm talking more about
made Mail Order Ninja. How come you don't see more of that kind of stuff of independent creators making stuff, trying to get into that marketplace?
Well, I mean,
I would think it's a much more viable and open market than superhero comics. Well,
who is doing that and being very aggressive about it, we just haven't really talked about it. Jim Valentino, big time. Big time getting into children's books and children's comics with their Silver line of books at Shadowline. They're probably half the books that they're doing at Shadowline are aimed at like six and up.
What are those books?
Have any of them really come out yet?
Yeah, have they come out yet?
I believe they're starting to. Yeah, okay. I've talked to them at conventions and they have the books there. So it's we're Chris Simon, who is an editor at Shadowline and Silverline, lives here in Chicago. So we're going to get Chris in here one of these days to talk about that.
But back to the question is, why do you think that is? I mean, it's obvious that most comic publishers and most creative, independent creatives aren't doing that. They're not going towards that. Yeah. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I completely agree. Okay. And there's three. The biggest reason is the as we, I just said, the educational establishment is very leery of comics. Libraries love them. But comic stores don't, the vast majority anyway. And the ones that are too risky of a distribution model. There's just too few of them to build a major publishing initiative around. Unless you're a singular talent and a singular business person like Jeff Smith, who was a 10-year overnight success story.
Right.
The other problem is the bookstore, like the book publishers, Random House, Scholastic, they certainly know the bookstore market, the library market, and the school market, and they can reach those markets. They can't reach the school market for the reasons that, I've outlined before, but obviously we want to change that. But they can reach those other two big markets. And they could potentially, Bone is one of the biggest children's book success stories of the last several years.
Well, that's through Scholastic that they reach the school market through that. I mean, and going
well, they're in school libraries, but they're not being taught. And that's a big difference. That's the thing we want to change. Mm-hmm. We want to definitely get them into school libraries too, but our big goal is to get them assigned reading in class.
Make it part of the curriculum.
Make it part of the curriculum and say that this is a good thing. And for certain students, it may be the best thing. But what HarperCollins put out, the Magic Trixie books with Jill Thompson, which are her best work by far. I think it's her most beautiful story. It's the most I like Scary Godmother, but I love Magic Trixie. I think it's every page is full of life, and it's her best painting work by far. I think it really is the best work she's ever done. HarperCollins didn't know how to sell that book. They had no idea what to do with it. They don't get comics. And they can't even sell comics the way they sell picture books, because they're not really picture books. They can't sell them the way they sell chapter books or young adult novels, because they're not really any of those. They're like them, but they are not them. And the people at the book publishers know they should be making comics because that's where all the money is right now. That's where all the growth is in the publishing industry. But they have no idea. They don't understand it. The book buyers at Barnes & Noble, at Borders, barely understand it. Mm-hmm. Borders is probably the best of all of them. But they still barely get it. And they certainly still don't get kids. They get who's buying manga. They get who's buying, they get the late teen and early 20s buying market, both boys and girls. They get that. Don't get kids.
Stuff associated with the movies, obviously, yeah.
But when it comes to creating anything for a child, the only real success story aside from Bone, and a couple of classic books have generally done pretty well, Amulet, Bone, those have done well. The only other big success story I think I can really point to is the cartoon books line by Art Spiegelman and his wife, Francois Mouly, or Moulet. I'm not sure. I've never.
We'll go with Mouly.
We'll go with, that's how it's spelled, and I'm going to go with it. They're very smart. They're very clever. They're very sort of books for smart parents to buy their smart children. They're good.
The precocious children.
I'm not saying
here's
they're
some
not
wooden
good.
Toys. Here's some wooden toys for you.
Yeah,
to learn.
Exactly. Exactly.
To learn your spatial dynamics.
Yeah, it's that type of
douchebags.
Yeah,
but they're great books. They're adorable. They're great stuff for very beginning reader types. But they are again a lonely island in a pretty much empty sea, because again the financial incentives don't exist. People want to make comics, but they don't know how to sell it. The only other publisher that gets it right is First Second, and they are again very very unique in this.
What about Boom? And they're they came out with the
Pixar, I think they will.
Stuff and the Muppet stuff, mm-hmm. and
I'm
Incredibles.
I've been trying to get work at Boom, like doing the Muppet stuff and the Wally comics for a while. But I've been trying to get the people at Boom to talk to me about the people at Disney Publishing. I can get on the phone all the time because they think this is great. They've already were part of this project in Maryland that we're hopefully going to be now hitching into, where they take comics into schools in Maryland. State Board of Education is four square behind comics in the classroom, and we're going to turn their existing initiative into part of our big case study. But like Boom, Boom is doing fantastic work, and they have a lot of fantastic people there. They, I still don't think they know that they're in the position of being a company with fantastic content, probably the best content, the most marquee content for kids. In comics right now. Mm. And that includes the stuff the book publishers are doing as well.
Only fucking J.K. Rowling would get off her high horse and let somebody publish a Harry Potter.
Bitch.
Greedy bitch. I don't know. That's the thing, though. Because I think it does come down to the simplicity of something recognizable that kids will latch onto, and then using that, how you want. Come out with a Hannah Montana comic book
for us, it was G.I. Joe and
Transformers taught me how to read.
Yep. Transformers.
Transformers was my first comic.
Yep.
And
Gateway Comics.
And I'm all for that. And I think again, the Pixar stuff, the Muppet stuff especially has been phenomenal. And I actually would love to use the Muppet stuff as, there's narrative things in there you can use as teachable material. It's fantastic. It really, really is. But I think Boom, and I'm not going to say that they don't, because again, they have a long-term publishing goal here. They've got to be thinking 4 or 5 years in advance. But, they're just figuring out, a book publishing plan, because they've been publishing comics into the direct market. And now they're having to take this very valuable IP out into the wider world. But, when you're talking about distributing around the globe, printing hundreds of thousands, if not millions of copies, there's a lot of risk. There's a lot of variables. It's dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
It's the stuff that could bankrupt a company.
Yeah, for a small publisher.
If you're wrong by just if you misrepresent orders by just like 20%, you could be underwater.
You could be done.
Yeah. And so they have to take a measured approach. I'm hoping to, have some pretty good discussions with them about how we can integrate their material into our larger project, because I think it would be the perfect fit of anything out there right now. And they're smart guys there. And they're guys that are willing to do innovative things and be forward-looking.
I think, I mean, like, I look at my kids, and I've never pushed my kids towards anything comic book related, but it's obviously around. I mean, there's, you know, there's tons of graphic novels and stuff around the house. And
sure.
But the movies and different things, and my kids have an interest in comics to some degree, but they really don't look at it at this point. I mean, they're young. My daughter's 7. My son's going to be 4. So they're really, really young, but they don't look at it any differently than any other type of book that they read, you know, a picture book, that kind of thing.
That's how it should be, what we want to do.
And I think that's the, you know, that's the key, is just sort of like the exposure. You know, it's like the only reason a comic is weird to a kid is because they've never seen one before.
Right.
But you put a comic book, you know, next to a picture book, and there's not to a, you know, to a 7 or 8 year old, there's not going to be much difference between those two, quite honestly. But it was funny. I came home the other day, and Jack, my son, was sitting on the couch with my Secret Wars hardcover flipping through. I'm like, hey, what are you doing?
The omnibus?
Yeah.
Put that book down, God damn it! Be careful.
He just liked it because it had Spider-Man on the cover. But
he does get to beat up both the X-Men and who else does Spider-Man punk in there?
He punked the X-Men bad in issue 5. Yeah,
the X-Men really hard.
Or no, issue 3. Issue 3. Sorry, my
and
bad.
And Titania. He beats her up a bit later.
Man, she's a punch.
And the Wasp takes out the X-Men.
X-Men are a bunch of bitches in that.
They,
they really do get just punked continually.
Yeah, and she plays Magneto bad.
That's why I laugh now, because you have Spider-Man and Wolverine all the time in the Avengers books, and, you know, Spider-Man's always so intimidated by Wolverine. It's like, dude, you kicked his ass and his fucking 5 buddies' asses long 20, time ago.
20-odd years ago.
Come on.
His speed, it's unbelievable.
Well, Professor X made him forget it, so at the end, so it didn't, as far as Spider-Man knows.
He didn't know he kicked his ass. Was that when Wolverine was still...
Oh, that's right. He forgot about all that, didn't he? Yeah, I guess so.
Was Wolverine... Was that...
He was still the best there was at what he did. Even what he did wasn't nice.
Before he became a marquee character.
Yeah, he wasn't Wolverine.
He was on his way. He was on his way at that point.
No, I mean,
that was before the miniseries, right? That was before that's when he became...
It was Paul Smith era X-Men. So it was right about that time. Yeah, it was.
I think the miniseries came out after.
Oh, whatever. Wolverine was a bitch back then, man.
Still a punk.
What is he, 5'1"?
Yeah.
All right.
Tiny Canadian.
let's start wrapping this one up. Josh, once again, best way for people on the internet to find out what you're doing and get in touch with you.
Somebody smoking skunk weed in here? What the fuck?
Skunk outside. It is pretty vile.
Suntrips just walked in. He's been sparking up in the parking lot.
Well,
radio guys.
You can go to my website at joshelder.com. Or just email me directly at elder1938@gmail.com.
And if you are in Chicago on Saturday, September 19th, you can cruise over by Josh's table at the Windy City Comic Con and talk with him about all of this very exciting stuff, because you're going to be a guest there.
I surely am.
Looking forward to it.
Indeed.
Yeah. And for our full guest list, which we're... Gosh, at this point, a couple weeks out, go to
Windy. They're not all going to fit.
Windy City Comic Con.
Josh,
it's going to be people sitting on each other's laps.
There's going to be somebody on your lap, just so you know.
How well do you know Jeff Darrow? How well do you want to know Jeff Darrow? So, yes, go to WindyCityComicCon.com. You can check out Tom on Tom versus the Flash 3 times a week.
More like 2 right now.
Yes, you're getting married, I understand. As he runs you through the history of the DC universe, one issue at a time. I'm also... hear more of me if you're a glutton for punishment on the aforementioned 11 o'clock comics with David Price, Vince B, and Wood. And David and Wood are going to be in for Windy City as well. So
Not Vince.
Not Vince.
Bitch.
Yeah. I told him we were going to get Gary Panner. Just send him off. Send him off the fucking ledge. Yeah. So that's all the news that's worthy to print there. Let's wrap this.
What's been going on at 11 o'clock? I haven't listened in a while. I haven't been listening. What's been going on over there on the
Vince?
Mostly 9/11 conspiracy talk.
What? Yeah.
I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm kidding.
It's
those wacky truthers.
Yeah.
Vince is into old horror comics and X-Force.
Jesus Christ.
David loves Fantastic Four but hates it because there's not an inker.
There's no inker?
No, no, it's Paul Mounce is Cohen right over Eagle Sham's pencils.
Oh.
And
cutting out the middleman.
And Wood is lost 40 pounds.
He's keeping it real.
Yeah.
So that's what's going
on. He took off some of those gold chains and lost 20 pounds.
He took out his beard. He took out his grill.
He took out his grill.
Was like 5 pounds alone, wasn't it?
That beard and the grill and the chains, the clock.
Yeah.
The comically oversized clock he was wearing.
Well, what you guys don't know is that Wood just finished up an entire season of From G's to Gents.
Oh, really? He was just on that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So now he's all cleaned up. So, all right. Check out 11 o'clock every Thursday or Friday. Everyone, I want to thank you for being here this evening. Mr. Josh Elder.
Pleasure as always.
Mr. Tom Caters.
Always remember the children. Always remember.
Next time we see you, 250 is all about the
children. Yeah.
Gonna be married.
I'm married right now.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
As we speak.
As you are listening to this.
See, 250 episodes, and now he gets the whole time difference thing, and I've forgotten about it. And Sal, good to have.
I don't think Jim Beam's the best time travel companion for you.
No, it isn't. Oh, it's a good companion.
Let's get inside this glass bubble and travel to the future.
Come with
what
me.
Is this brown, tasty liquid?
Mm. It burns like fire,
but yet so sweet. All right, everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week.
I've been
and
listening
weekend.
For like 2 weeks now. Every day, I'm not drinking during the week now. I'm not drinking. It's like it's like wow, that's really what someone drying out sounds like. Huh? That's
Chris, why are you shaking uncontrollably?
I'm not drinking during the week.
I how love much? Water. Water is delicious.
I'm like, really? It's that hard? I can't remember the last time I had a drink on a Monday.
In between time.
Yeah.
In between time. What?
No.
Well, you fucked it all up.
Oh, God.
You've been
it.
Here and I haven't. You fucked it up.
This is what happens when he doesn't drink during the week.
In the meantime. In the meantime.
In between time.
Thank you. We'll be everywhere again. Head around. Comics.
250 done.
Wow.
That was
over, right?
Blockbuster.
Are we halfway there?
No. I give it another 3 months.
I just came back for the 250. Yeah. I'm
you
want
to come back for 500?
If you guys make it to 500, I'll come back. But, I don't know.
We still got to talk about that. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.